Hey everyone, welcome to the newest episode of the SaaS Sessions podcast. This is me, Sunil. I'm going to be your host for this episode. Today I have Avirul Bhatnagar with me. Avirul is a senior associate at Guild Capital, which focuses on early stage or venture investments in India and in the US. Along with this, Avirul also runs his blog, juniorvc.com, along with a group of contributors. He writes about the Indian startup ecosystem and venture capital and even more. So, hey, Avirul, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Sunil. Thank you so much for the kind invitation and the very wonderful introduction.
Yeah. So, is there anything that you want to add to your intro?
No, I think that's good. That's very nice. I would just say that I've been keenly looking at the SaaS ecosystem. Last week, I actually wrote about Postman, which is an amazing business that he is building in India for the world. I'm very bullish about that as a strategy in India in general.
Right. And I think that's what we're going to talk about today, right? Like, can India build and sell to the world? And I know that you have written a piece on that on your blog. And just like me, there are many people, and probably people who are listening to this episode are, like, you know, big fans of the blog and your LinkedIn posts as well. I'm pretty sure, like, most of the people listening to this have, you know, come across at least one of your posts. I mean, pretty wonderful. So how did you, like, start writing, right? How is the journey like, right? Like, from IIT and IIM, and then you're associated at Morgan Stanley, but for a very short time, from there into, like, the VC world. So how did that happen?
Right. So it's an interesting journey. And I think you've asked two questions. So let me both. One is on how I ended up here. And the second is how I started writing.
Right.
And I'll probably integrate them together into one story because they're not really dissociated. I fell in love with physics in around 10th grade. Before that, I actually hated it because most people and most teachers would take a very stock approach to it. And you'd have to learn physics in a rote manner. And I remember solving an equation of motion, and then really unlocked that as a concept for me, right? And I ended up majoring in engineering physics at IIT. In my second year, I think two very critical things happened for me. I started a company which was an educational magazine with a couple of seniors of mine. And we basically were trying to democratize career opportunities for students in, let's say, you know, big cities which are not metros. So you'll take Bhopal or Indore,
right?
Or, you know, Kanpur, Lucknow, right? So have money and people know what's there, but they don't have access to opportunities, right? So that was one. The second is I stumbled upon this website called Quora. I wrote my first answer somewhere around 2012, right? It got two upvotes, so I still remember it was about something that we were launching on campus. And those two experiences really, you know, I think in hindsight have been very important milestones for me. I didn't realize it at that point, but they become very core to how I look at life and things. Right. So that was my first brush with startups and writing. And, you know, once I started writing on Quora, college, most people don't really study much. And I was one of them. So I do other things. I was a head of literary arts in my third year, like writing on Quora, not so much like I do now, but, you know, somewhat tapping into that writing passion that I had discovered. I've been reading since I've been like 4 years old. So I've always loved stories, and storytelling is probably something I love.
Right.
And this, you know, startup and writing thing, in the fourth year continued, I joined a startup called Function Space, which had raised money from Nexus as a, you know, growth marketing associate. I was actually an intern basically for 6 months while I was in college. So January, May, I was doing that. One of the founders, Sumit Maniar, actually now runs this company called Rupeek, and we've been in touch, and I've been very happy to see his success. I mean, it's a massive business now.
Yeah.
But Function Space, obviously, you know, was a great experience for me, learning how to growth hack and market and get people on board. And I think that really was my first experience with building something for scale, even though it was not that big. And it was a good experience. So Function Space didn't really work out for the company. It was not like I was going to join it because I had to join B School after that. And I was very set on doing consulting. I had a consulting job from IIT Bombay, but I didn't join, ended up joining IIM Ahmedabad. And, you know, the funny thing is that if you end up interviewing with some consulting firms when you're an undergrad, they don't interview you. And it's mm-hmm. like the most odd thing because you have a very strong profile. So right. I ended up not getting like one shortlist. I'll not name that firm because they'll probably be upset about it. And I ended up, you know, doing an internship very randomly in Morgan Stanley, which was private equity. Uh-huh. And that gave me the experience and exposure to buy side investing. Right. So it was large assets, not, you know, small businesses that are just getting off the ground, like startups. But I realized that that's something I like, right? And my going back to my experiences over the last 4 years, the two startups that I did, I realized I like startups and I like this. What's the mix of the two? And that's when you're investing, right? And it's a very, very, I would say, very naive way of looking at what you want to do in life. But you know, that's what I decided, that maybe I'll do that. So after my summers, you know, in the second year, I actually started writing a bit more on Quora. And that's really when things started picking up mm-hmm. for me on the writing side. And what I always used to write was about the why of things and why of things I understand. So when I started writing in IIT, it was because people had this really weird view about students who went to good colleges, that they're just nerds, they don't have a life. And obviously I knew that I did everything but study. So I obviously was not a good sample set for that. And that really drove me to write in the beginning and, you know, help people understand what's really happening in IIT. And the same thing, you know, continued when I was looking for which B school to join, both, you know, in India as well as contemplating the US, but I'm thankfully decided not to go there. There was no real insight into how things actually work in any of these B schools. They're always like CAT strategies and do this for CAT and do that for CAT. But I'm like, what should I do to understand what's happening there?
Yeah.
Why is Ahmedabad so good? What happens on campus? Why should I take that as a choice?
Mm-hmm.
That answer was not clear to me. And I was like, nobody's doing it, so I'll do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's when I really started writing on Quora. And suddenly it just picked up, right? So I went from, you know, I was slowly building my follower base, but I think that second year in IMA, after that, I really started scaling. So I think I was probably like 30,000 followers by end of my second year, 15x, mm-hmm. and then 80 in my second year of venture capital, right? And I saw that I've really stumbled upon something. So
yeah,
my writing journey actually goes back to 2012, like I told you, that was when I first wrote. But things started, you know, shaping up in, let's say, 2015, 16, which was like 4 years after I actually started writing. And I think since 2015, mid, which I would say is like June 2015, mm-hmm. and today we are in June 2020, that's probably 260 weeks, I've written every week without fail. Right?
Oh, that's, yeah.
So that's compounding, right? And you know, I was, after, you know, rewinding a little bit after B school, I was thinking whether I should join consulting. I had some good offers from all firms, but, you know, Guild happened very randomly because I did a winter internship with them because I'd not gone on exchange, and that was a good decision in hindsight.
Yeah.
They were trying to give me an offer because venture firms don't hire fresh graduates.
Yeah.
Either from school or from undergrad, and I had zero experience. So I'm like this anomaly in the ecosystem. I think there's no other venture investor who has no experience beyond venture, right? So
yeah.
So I got into venture investing, and it was pretty lucky, and it was not something I'd planned on. But you can see, you know, where the origins are. I would have probably ended up in venture investing anyway.
Mm-hmm.
This would have been my first year in venture. I would have completed 4 years at a consulting firm and then moved. I think I have now got 4 years of experience, right? And while I was writing on Quora, I realized that a lot of people actually started sending me pitches because of that. And I said, wow, this is an interesting way to get introduced to people, right? And, you know, you also found me from some LinkedIn post, right? So some, you know, very amazing startup founders also find me through some LinkedIn post, right? And it's very good for building credibility. One day I was writing on Quora and I just reposted it on LinkedIn and it just flew. I was like, wow, this is great. And a lot of people actually send me requests after that, and they wanted to chat about the startup ecosystem. So
interesting. Mm-hmm.
So, and then, you know, this why continued. And now, you know, what I realized in the venture ecosystem is that nobody talks about the why in VC in terms of why they invest, right? In
right.
India.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Talk to the US, where it's very deep and very well researched. There's A16Z and Ben Evans and a bunch of others. My inspiration actually is a VC, and that's where you can see my name comes from, right? So Fred Wilson yeah. writes this amazing blog called A VC.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I started a junior VC in homage to him. I actually
retweeted. Oh, nice. Yeah.
I retweeted to him and he sent me a message. It was very sweet. He just said, amazing. That's all. So so then this was like 2 years back. And yeah. And this, you know, this a junior VC, actually, if you look at its origins, it started as like this blog on Quora, because I had such a captive audience there, so I could just start and experiment with new things.
Mm-hmm.
And it would just be a list of 10 reads on the SASE, on the, sorry, startup ecosystem, not the SASE ecosystem.
Yeah.
And then somebody suggested to me, hey man, why don't you make this a newsletter? I'm like, that's cool, interesting. So
mm-hmm.
I signed yeah. on MailChimp and started with like, I think 20, 30 subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
From the 80,000 followers I had on Quora. And I just wanted to keep it really small, and I didn't want to market it, but somehow it just organically started growing.
Yeah, right? That's the best, right?
Absolutely. And so yeah. that organic growth, focusing on the why, and people really started liking it and reaching out to me that, hey, we have an investor who talks about why things are happening, right? People ask, right. Why do you fund these massive loss-making businesses? What's the rationale? Are you for dumb people, or... I thought investors are smart.
Right.
So, you know, the why really resonated with a lot of people, and then this really picked up very fast. Mm-hmm. And at some point of time, I realized that I just don't have the bandwidth to do it in a high quality way if I'm doing it alone, because
right.
there was this demand and the articles kept becoming bigger and richer. So I sent out a mail on the newsletter saying that, hey, I'm looking for some people who'd love to join me on this journey. And 150 people applied. And I was like, oh my God.
That's too much.
So I was very privileged to get that. And I was lucky to have Keshav, Saloni, Shiraz, and Abhinav
mm-hmm.
join as the first, you know, four members of the team. And I think this was around last year in April and mm-hmm. April, May, approximately. Mm-hmm. And I think August end, we launched the website, and that's when things like really picked off. So at this point, you know, a junior VC is, I think, 15,000 subscribers. We're a 12-member team.
Interesting, yeah.
Have like 75,000, 80,000 hits a month for just two posts a month. So
yeah.
it's pretty amazing, I think, the kind of quality content that we're writing.
Yeah.
And I'm very proud of it. And on the, you know, in the parallel, you know, work front, done four investments, led all of them. Some of them are doing really well. I think I'm looking forward to investing in a couple of few SaaS businesses as well as tech businesses in the coming
awesome.
Mm-hmm. 2 months. And it's been like a good extension. You know, junior VC is something I do on the side, and it's been a really good extension of, you know, my venture career, because
mm-hmm.
it integrates very well with what I'm doing. So I think, you know, that's a long answer to
yeah
question,
but that's an interesting journey. And I think I know a lot of people like a lot of VCs specifically, right, who are like, you know, big fan of Fred Wilson and crazy. And yeah, and talking about the state of SaaS in India, so you said that's something which is close to you as well, and you are planning to have a couple of SaaS investments in India, right? So, like, according to you, you have been digging a lot of research, and you might have done a lot of research on this particular topic, right? SaaS in India. So, can you tell us more on, like, you know, the current state of the SaaS ecosystem in India?
Right. So, I'll just first qualify, I'm not an expert, right? So, I'm not doing SaaS
yeah.
investment.
I mean, this is just your perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've not been doing investing in SaaS for 10 years. I think after 10 years, I might be able to claim that I know something.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, how I look at it is from, you know, a very fundamental way. I think the first wave of software in India was actually Infosys, right? And it's mm-hmm. weird to say that, but it was a services business that really proved this abstract model of build in India, sell to the world, right? You don't necessarily need to build product in India. You can also build teams in India that are able to service clients globally, right? And I think the origins of SaaS in India with this model comes from, you know, the 1990s when these companies pioneered the kind of model that now is more productized, right? But I don't think they were doing anything different from build in India, sell to the world, right? They literally were doing exactly that, right? It was just services model. And I think that really is the core as to why Bangalore became such a big hub for tech, because so many people were exposed to what was happening in the US, which obviously is a couple of decades ahead of us in a lot of ways. And in the 1990s, if people were working with Infosys, they would see that the US is exploding on the internet, new innovations happening there. And I think that that really brought a feeling of building a tech business in India, right? So that, I think that's phase one. That's like SaaS zero.
Right.
I think that, you know, took 15 years approximately. And I would say the next phase of SaaS would come with Zoho, like the key business at that time. But there are a bunch of other businesses that, you know, are slightly smaller or don't exist, but they were definitely very important there. I would even put Book My Show in some way as a... there it was just, you know, focused on India, but totally a software company, right? So that's like SaaS 1.0, and SaaS 2.0 is now where we are today, where we are able to leverage the internet to sell online. There are some wonderful businesses that are getting built out of India, like Postman, Freshworks, you have ChargeTap, CleverTap, so many businesses that are leveraging this marketing-led model. And that really doesn't need an on-ground sales team, right? And what was the big issue with SaaS 1.0 was that you need people in the US to sell in the US, right? And I think that barrier has gone because of the, you know, new marketing-led models and ARPUs coming down. You don't need to actually have someone go sell to an enterprise head. It's a bottom-up sales approach. So many other things have happened, right? That has, that these are all tailwinds for India, because then the relationship starts mattering less and the product starts mattering more when you're able to do that, right? And when you need to have a sales guy to actually go and close, it becomes very difficult to sell if you don't have someone there, right, in the US. I'm not saying that Indian companies can't do it. It just is a big leap, right, versus having a marketing-led model and you can just sell off the shelf. So SaaS 2.0, I think, is a big unlock. And the reason is that the internet has democratized access and the ability to sell, brought down prices, made things more modularized and world-class products. I mean, I think Postman is a gold standard and there is no business that can compete with it in terms of collaboration on building APIs.
So I think
that's where we are today. And I fundamentally believe India is in great shape because I think we have the greatest depth of technical talent that is able to understand English, right? I mean, China, for example, they're also building products, but they tend to be for internal consumption. There are very few Chinese businesses that go global. Probably the one I know of is TikTok. from a tech standpoint, obviously, there are so many Chinese manufacturers selling everywhere, but... So I think, you know, that really helps us stand out. And, you know, our cost structures are better, more talented people, design sense is improving a lot. I think all these things are, there's a strong confluence and it will be another 5 to 10 years before which we are able to build big businesses out of India.
Totally. And when you say, when we say, right, like this is the current state of SaaS in India, and but talking about, let's say that if we have like some pillars, right, for the ecosystem, right? So I would say that there would be like 5 pillars. One is startups, second is funding, third is people, fourth is technology, and fifth is the market, right? Overall. So these 5 pillars would maybe compromise of the ecosystem. It's just something that I came up with. It's not something I read somewhere or whatever. But yeah, maybe talking about these 5 pillars, right? So what has been the one thing that helped unlocked, or was it like, you know, one thing led to another and it unlocked the whole ecosystem that Indian SaaS companies can build in India and sell to the world? But talking about Indian SaaS companies who are trying to build in India and sell in India, right? So what is helping them not get the same velocity versus a company which is trying to build in India and sell in the US? So where is the, like, the gap here, according to you?
Absolutely. I think the pillars are very helpful, right? I think the enabler was the internet. So I'd probably, you know, add one there, which is an enabler, or replace one of them.
Right.
The enabler is really important. I think the market has always been there. Mm-hmm. I would say that the last 10 years, again, because of the internet, has accelerated digital adoption, right? And if more people are using digital delivery models, more software will be needed. Simple as that, right?
Yeah. So
they're just very strongly correlated. And I think that has been the biggest tailwind. Software in general, as they say, software is eating the world. I think that has been like the biggest enabler. So the market has been unlocked by the internet. Now, if you're selling to the US, it's just a 25 trillion economy that is technologically pretty advanced versus India, which is a 2.5 trillion economy that is still coming up the curve. So the usage of software fundamentally is just going to be much higher in the US, and the market will just be much bigger because it's 10 times bigger. So if you're looking to tap a bigger market, you will sell to the US, and that's pretty obvious. But that doesn't mean that, you know, the Indian software market will not be big in 10 years or so, right? It will obviously come up the curve as well. But at this point, I think what has been solved because of access to internet, and I say Jio has been the enabler here, access has been solved. The problem is really the ability to pay, right? And the ability to pay exists in the US for the reasons I mentioned, but the ability to pay in India is slightly limited. If you look at per capita incomes, it's probably close to like 65,000 in the US, and it's somewhere close to 2,500 in India, right? So you can see the disparity is 30x. So I think, you know, those things will change with time, obviously. Mm-hmm. But if you're just looking at state today, the US is just definitely a massive market that is digitally ahead. So it fundamentally is a bigger market, and that's why people will be able to build bigger companies that serve the US and other global markets.
Totally. And like, this is like very interesting, right? And I was also talking to a few other VCs on the same topic, right? Like the current state of SaaS in India. And I think most of the points are, like, you know, echoing each other, right? So that's a really interesting take. I think so, Viral, yeah, we have reached the course, but I have like three lightning questions for you. So you are for that?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, Viral, so first one, what do you know about your work now that you wish you would have known when you first started?
That it's super chaotic and unstructured. It's highly entrepreneurial, actually, honestly speaking. At least specifically for my job, you have to define your own workflows, which is very exciting and challenging, but I absolutely did not know that when I started.
Right. And second one, so what did your biggest professional failure teach you?
I think it taught me humility. In fact, I wouldn't say it's professional. I would say, you know, even academic failures are important. Humility is something that I learned very long back, and I'm very happy about it. Failures are great teachers, and it's good to keep failing. I think that if you're not failing enough, you're not trying hard enough. And I've kind of embraced it. In fact, it's just like part and parcel of my job, because if I don't see failure, it means that we are not trying hard enough or investing aggressively enough, right? So I think the one that really taught me a lot was very long back, because that's when, you know, I did not know how to deal with failure and actually embrace it. But now I think it's pretty much part and parcel. I don't think too much about it.
Totally. And like, last one is like, what's the number one thing that has helped you shorten your learning curve?
I have an open mind and I'm damn curious. So I will not go approaching anything with any thoughts, like literally.
Yeah.
And I just want to learn everything. I mean,
Totally.
I think, you know, these two things have helped me a lot in terms of shortening the learning curve. It's extremely important.
Yeah, asking the question why, right? And I think that has helped you like write those like a lot of blogs as well, as you said earlier, right?
Right, absolutely.
Awesome. So yeah, it's been you know, great speaking with you, Avril, and thanks a lot for coming on, you know, taking time and sharing these amazing insights with us today.
Thanks so much.